Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, on Tuesday, we heard from head coach Mike McCarthy in the usual day-after-game follow-up to the Packers' victory over the Eagles on Monday Night Football. And Coach McCarthy made no bones about it. Yes, it's great to get back in the win column. It was a long time coming. Great to have that winning feeling again. But there's not a whole heck of a lot of time to think about it because it's a short week now. The Houston Texans are coming to Lambeau Field, and this coaching staff and the players, they have to turn the page quickly.
Figuratively and literally, this is a situation where the Packers have to have a quick mindset and need to be able to reset themselves because both from the perspective of you don't want to get too high, yes, it is a great win, but it is only one win. And on the other end of it, it's a short week now against the Houston Texans team. That defensively has been one of the best in the NFL so far this season. So I thought that was really the main message that McCarthy had in his news conferences of, yes, this is awesome. We feel good about where we're at. They felt like they finally got what they expected out of a good week of practice, that the outcome that they wanted. And now they got to try to reset themselves and make sure they can do it again here now that you get back at Lambeau Field.
Yeah, and at this point, we don't have a whole lot of updates injury-wise on quarterback Aaron Rodgers or linebacker Clay Matthews, the two players that that most people are going to be concerned about. It sounds like, from what Coach McCarthy suggested, that the shoulder injury to Clay Matthews is the bigger concern versus the hamstring injury to Rodgers. And, you know, when you look at the film of that blindside block that Matthews took from Alan Barber, not so much the hit, but the way he landed on the ground, kind of getting his arm pinned under him, looks like that's what was really the problem with the shoulder.
Yeah, and basically, and Matthews talked about this after the game, really banged the shoulder there. Really, it was kind of impeded a little bit, so he wasn't able really to break the fall. It just took it, you know, directly. And we've seen that happen before, those AC joint injuries with, you know, Randall Cobb and some of these players the last few years that have dealt with it. It's a tough injury. It's one that can be played through, but it's certainly something that's, you know, hurt. It hurts. It's an injury.
Yeah.
So for Matthews' perspective, he was ready to go back in there. He did actually go back in there, and then the doctors and team trainers decided to send him to the locker room, make sure nothing was broken. He came back, got that full clear, so that was positive. But certainly, as McCarthy said, that he didn't have really a chance to talk to Matthews, but was assuming that he was probably feeling that a little bit because he basically had to play that entire game, whatever it ended up being, 44 snaps on a bum shoulder.
Yeah, and McCarthy gave Matthews a lot of credit for getting back in there and gutting it out. We, as you said, we've seen players over the years play through those shoulder sprains, and that can't be easy. With regards to Rodgers' hamstring injury, we kind of hinted on the show yesterday. It'll be interesting to see from an offensive game plan standpoint if the Packers go back to more of that pistol formation that we saw 2 years ago in 2014 when Rodgers was dealing with a calf injury at the end of the regular season and into the playoffs. Kind of a shortened shotgun formation that you know, limits the mobility or the necessary mobility that he would need to make handoffs, make throws, and stuff like that. Be curious to see just how much we see of that on Sunday with the Packers back at Lambeau.
Yeah, that was one of the primary adjustments that the Packers offense made when Rodgers ended up tweaking his calf muscle back in Tampa in 2014. Now, McCarthy, the one thing he did say is that he doesn't anticipate that this is going to be maybe as inhibiting as the calf injury was for him. I mean, that was something they really had to monitor. And I remember Rodgers even said after the season that, well, it did heal. The muscle itself looked a little bit different just because of the nature of the injury. So hamstrings, those are tough. We all know about that, and especially with Rodgers and how much he likes to get out of the pocket and extend plays. That's something that definitely is going to I don't want to say stop you from doing that, but, you know, work against that.
Yeah.
But as we also learned late in that 2014 season and through that playoff run, Rodgers can make it work too. And if they need to, the offense has shown that they can do some quick reads and get the ball out of his hands quickly and kind of make him a pocket passer. He's versatile enough to do that. But obviously when you look at what he does best, it's certainly something that challenges that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and speaking of challenges, Mike McCarthy talked about how challenging this Houston defense is going to be, and we'll break that down a little bit more when we come back after the break, back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here. Wes Hodkiewicz there. Wes, this Houston Texans defense, Mike McCarthy was pretty stern in his belief that this defense is going to challenge Green Bay's offense. The Packers offense certainly on the rise, finding its groove, playing a very, very efficient game Monday night in Philadelphia. But Houston ranked, I believe it's fifth overall in yards allowed in the league, also ranked in the top 10 in passing yards allowed, in third down defense, in first downs allowed. And this is a defense that a lot of people thought maybe wouldn't be able to do this and stay among the league's elite with the early season injury to J.J. Watt. They haven't had their three-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year for the bulk of the season, but they're still getting the job done.
Yeah, I think you have to give Romeo Crennel and that defensive coaching staff a lot of credit for what they've been able to accomplish this season, despite not having Watt, because, I mean, I don't know how many defenses really can not only survive losing one of their best players, you know, their best player, but one of the league's best players.
Yeah.
And they've really found a way to do it. I think the thing that stands out to me the most, and obviously there's a litany of pass rushers there when you talk about Jadeveon Clowney and, you know, Whitney Marcellus and some of those guys that really can make big plays. To be honest with you, I think it starts with Bernardrick McKinney, who is an inside linebacker I was really high on when he came out in 2015.
Yeah, young guy, young player.
Already over 100 tackles on the season, 4 sacks, 1 fumble. He makes plays and has really good size for the position. I think that's always been a deep defense. You go back to the days when Wade Phillips was there. I mean, they've been a defense that's really set the tone in the NFL. You know, also since J.J. Watt's entered the league in 11. So they've found ways to continually build upon that, and that's one of the reasons they've been able to do what they've done this year, despite losing Watt to that back injury.
Yeah, for sure. One thing this defense hasn't been able to do, though, much like the Packers have struggled defensively, is that they haven't taken the ball away.
Yeah.
This Sunday afternoon at Lambeau Field will be two teams that are both on the negative side in turnover differential for the season. And not to say that the Packers have had a major problem turning the ball over on offense. They're starting to protect it a little bit more. Houston, on the other hand, on offense, quarterback Brock Osweiler, I believe he's thrown 13 interceptions this year, probably lost a couple of fumbles in there as well. Houston's negative turnover differential has been an even bigger problem perhaps for them than for the Packers.
Yeah, this transition for Osweiler from Denver going into Houston, obviously a big signing this offseason, and both of those two teams were kind of jockeying for his services. It's been a little rough. And you look at Bill O'Brien, he has a tremendous record with quarterbacks in terms of developing them and in finding guys that fit his scheme. Osweiler's still trying to figure out exactly where he fits into this thing. He's big, he's lengthy. I remember his days at ASU, I watched him a lot when Dennis Erickson was the coach there. And
sure.
There's a lot to be impressed with in terms of his makeup, and obviously, you know, was a late kind of transition to the position. But this has been something. When you look at 2016 in the NFL, in 1995, it was a little different. If your touchdown and interception ratio was very similar, that wasn't necessarily the end of the world. But in 2016, you have to protect the football, and that's been one issue for Houston. And unfortunately, as you said, with their defense, they just haven't been able to make enough of those big plays in terms of changing the field position and getting those turnovers to really overcome that at times.
Yeah, this is an interesting stretch for the Packers offense in terms of the matchups. The Philadelphia Eagles, I believe, were sixth in overall defense heading into the Monday night game. The Packers knocked them down a couple of pegs to eighth. Now these next 2 weeks, Houston and Seattle both ranked in the top 10 in yards allowed defensively for the season. So as this Packers offense continues to find itself and find its groove, the challenges are there. This is not going to be easy to keep the offense in the rhythm that it is.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting too, you know, reading your story on Packers.com, this, as Mike McCarthy said, this is an uncommon opponent. This is someone we're not very familiar with. They're going to have to try to, and obviously they've done their research already, but trying to devise a game plan for a unit in which you've not seen a lot of these players. You haven't seen the scheme. I think the last time they might have saw Romeo Crennel was in 2011, if my memory serves correctly.
Yeah, that could be right.
City.
Yeah, with the Chiefs. Yeah.
So for that, it's very interesting, and in terms of just that unknown, then you have a team like Seattle, who they've gotten to know them so well over the last few years, despite the changes in their coordinators, still have a lot of the same personnel and a lot of the same strengths as the past few years. So that is something that really stands out to me. And when you talk about this stretch that's coming up, the fact that really, after this game, everyone's a pretty common opponent for them, and just got to kind of try to put together a game plan here to take down a Houston Texans team that really you're just seeing on film.
Yeah, and Houston in some ways a little hard to figure out exactly where their season is going, much like a lot of these teams in the NFL that are 6-5, 6-6, 5-6. A lot of teams are bunched in there across the league. The Texans were 6-3 just a couple of weeks ago. They've dropped two straight, still in first place in the AFC South. But if they were to lose to the Packers, they would drop into, I believe, a tie for first place because the 6-6 Colts. Is it the Colts?
Yep.
Yeah. The Colts are 6-6 and now heading into a bye week are right on their heels. So a very important game for Houston, coming off of two straight losses and a lot of questions there at quarterback. You know, kind of a team that is trying to find that turning point in their season, just like Green Bay.
They are, and obviously when you have DeAndre Hopkins, 1,500 yards a year ago, you want to feed him, you want to get him the ball, 610 yards this year, 55 catches, 3 touchdowns, so maybe not the numbers we're accustomed to seeing with him, but at the same time, we talk so much about Brock Osweiler, their other free agent acquisition this offseason was Lamar Miller, and he's a guy that they have fed the ball, 211 carries, 881 yards. He's a bell cow back. He showed that when he was in Miami.
Yep.
He's a guy that really can carry a load. So they've been feeding him and running that offense and trying to, you know, get their positive yards to the run game to allow things to be a little bit easier on Osweiler. When they've done that, when they've been successful at that, this team has won. So for the Packers, you know, when you get your run defense back to where it's at, 7th in the league right now, that's probably where this is going to start, is trying to stop Miller and try to make Osweiler to be the guy that beats you.
Yeah, I would think so. The Packers can't let Miller, he's on pace for, well on pace for a 1,000-yard season, can't let him get going and control those down and distances. But we've got more on this matchup to break down coming back after this on Packers Unscripted. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. Wes, in the last segment, you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins, the number one wide receiver for the Texans, not putting up the numbers this year that he did last year, but certainly, clearly their number one guy. And with the Packers getting Demaryius Randle back in action on Monday night against the Eagles, Mike McCarthy termed it a solid game for Randle, certainly coming back from that long layoff and the groin injury. I'm sure it wasn't easy for him to play really the entire game as he did. We saw a couple of missed tackles. We also saw a couple of good breaks on the ball, you know, to contest some passes there. I'll be curious to see. I think the Packers will use some safety help over a guy like Hopkins, but I'll be curious to see if Randle kind of gets that matchup job on the number one guy here for Houston on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see that as well, Mike, because this is a guy that, as you said, I mean, his longest catch, this year is only 35 yards, but he has explosive ability. You cannot let him beat you. That's something the NFL learned last season. Now, trying to find that chemistry with Osweiler has been, I think, a little bit more of a challenge this season, but the talent is still there. He's a young guy. He has a lot of ability, good size, good makeup. So this will be a big challenge for Randle. But I thought it was, and I wrote about this in our Insider Inbox this week, is that that was a good opportunity for Randle to get back on the field. No disrespect to the Eagles receivers at all, but there wasn't that huge, you know, Julio Jones type threat there that, you know,
yeah, and they were banged up in their perimeter group too.
Right.
They weren't at full strength in terms of their weapons there around Carson Wentz.
Yeah, and Jordan Matthews was dealing with that ankle injury throughout.
Right.
So I just think from a confidence perspective, to be able to just start, you know, just an okay matchup where you're not having to stand up to one of the top guys in the league, it's a good way to get him back intertwined in this defense, let him build a little bit of that. Now you go into this week, you do have Hopkins. I think Will Fuller's a really talented receiver. There's a reason why they took him as a first-round pick out of Notre Dame. He actually has their longest reception this year at 53 yards. And C.J. Fedorowicz, too, the interior of the defense is going to have to be aware of him. The one positive, the one, you know, kind of player that sort of blossomed out of Osweiler being there is Fedorowicz in terms of really becoming a staple in this offense and finding his niche. Big 6'5", 265 pounds, a guy they're going to have to account for. So the threats are there is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. The Packers need to make sure they are ready for it.
Yeah, and I thought the Packers took a step forward in terms of defending the tight end against the Eagles. We saw what Delanie Walker did. We saw what Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis for the Redskins did in the previous weeks. Zach Ertz had a couple of catches, but give credit to the Packers defense for not letting Ertz control the middle of the field the way some tight ends had previously. And it was an overthrow to Ertz with Joe Thomas in coverage and Clinton Dix sweeping around behind to snag that overthrow for an interception. So some positive steps there for the Packers defense in what had been a little bit of a troublesome area.
Yeah, and you and I do it too. We all focus on the turnovers and the pass rush. I thought the one thing the Packers really did well in that game that sometimes can be under the radar is how they handled their zone defenses, making sure that you pass off a guy, you don't let him get free, you don't let him find a soft cushion in the zone. For the most part, I think they did a really good job in this game of that.
Yeah, after that opening drive, the opening drive, the Eagles were finding those spaces in the zone. They moved down the field like no problem, and you're kind of like, whoa, you know, what's going on here? But give the Packers defense credit, only allowing two field goals the rest of the game after that opening touchdown drive, helped out by the fact that possessions were limited and whatnot, but that turned into a pretty solid performance by the defense overall.
Absolutely. And getting back to the turnovers too, I mean, against Wentz, that's such a big thing against a young quarterback. Try to do something, you know, psychologically to sort of maybe throw him off his game a little bit. When he does overthrow one, you take advantage of it. Osweiler's a fifth-year veteran. I mean, he's not a guy that just stepped in the league, but at the same time, he is pretty new to the starting position. Only did it on a handful of occasions last season. So it's important for the Packers, if they do have those opportunities in this game with Osweiler, if there is a chance to maybe find that big play, that you execute on it. Because really, if you look at the games in which they've lost this year, a lot of it has had to do with the defenses making big plays.
Yeah, for sure. And I thought the Packers' pass rush took a little bit of a step forward, too. Not just, you know, I know they ended up getting to four sacks and a couple of those were at the end when the Packers are up by 14 points, but just the pressure they put on Wentz. He got out of the pocket more than I thought he would and got more yards scrambling than I thought he would, but I thought overall that was more pressure than we had seen on an opposing quarterback over the previous month, and I think that was another step in the right direction for the defense as well. But before we go to a break, Wes, we'll take care of some sponsor business. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12, which is coming up awfully soon, by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Sub's, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, before we go, I wanted to touch briefly on the Thursday night game this week, Minnesota on the road at Dallas. I believe it's at Dallas.
It's actually in Minnesota.
My mistake, correction.
It'll feel like Dallas, though.
At U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, the Vikings hosting the Cowboys. We haven't really had a Thursday night game in a while that would generate this amount of interest amongst Packers fans in terms of the impact. Curious to hear your thoughts on this game. Dallas has won 10 in a row. The Vikings have lost 5 out of 6. The Cowboys can actually clinch a playoff spot this weekend if they get a win and then get a little bit of help with what happens on Sunday. So what do you see here coming up Thursday night with Cowboys and Vikings?
Well, first off, I think I actually take offense to your comment about how Packer fans wouldn't have found more, you know, kind of excitement out of some of these other Thursday night games. Jacksonville and Tennessee was a thriller. I watched all of that game back in Week 9, and I was thoroughly entertained from start to finish. I had to throw that in there.
Okay.
But getting to your point, this is actually, it's funny, this is an interesting game in that obviously Minnesota needs to get some wins here. They've had too many losses since that 5-0 start. And for the Cowboys' perspective, you have Dak Prescott and these guys. They're going into – this is going to be an interesting environment to play in. I think you and I saw it firsthand back in week two, just how unique that stadium is. So for them to go in there, it's going to take a lot. But, you know, at the same time, the things that the Cowboys do well probably fit that environment and how they can run the ball, set the tempo, maybe try to take Minnesota and their fans out of it a little bit. But – I think this is going to be a close game. I really do. I do believe, though, when you and I discussed it last week about this path for the Packers in the NFC North and Minnesota's kind of rough road ahead, it starts against the Cowboys. This is going to be a tough one for them.
Yeah, as much as it might pain Packers fans to cheer for the Cowboys, you have to cheer for the Cowboys this week to beat the Vikings because it certainly will help Green Bay. But this is an interesting one, I think, because I look back to last season where the Packers The circumstances are somewhat similar. The Packers had lost 4 out of 5 games, including a Thanksgiving game. They lost to the Bears, a frustrating loss. They're playing the following Thursday night in Detroit, and suddenly a Hail Mary victory changes the fortunes of the Packers' season when it looked like everything was completely spiraling downhill. The Vikings are at home here. The Cowboys have won 10 straight. You know how it is in this league. Even the best teams in the league play a clunker every once in a while, sort of like Seattle did, I think, last Sunday against Tampa Bay. It happens. I agree. I think even though everything points to this is a game that the Cowboys should win, I think this is going to be a four-quarter down-to-the-wire slugfest.
Yeah, and, Mike, let's be honest, too. I mean, if Minnesota does win this, then suddenly it's, oh, the Vikings are 7-5, break them up. They just beat the 10-win team. This is a team that can get on a run. That's how quickly the narrative can change in the NFL.
Absolutely.
But much like how Rodgers said, 4-7, 5-6, there's a big difference. There's a big difference between 7-5 and 6-6. So, I mean, that's going to be the big thing for the Vikings going in this game, is showing that they still were the team everybody thought they were the first 5 weeks of the season against what is the best team in the NFL right now.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.